The story that David read to us earlier is one of a series of stories that Jesus tells. Just before he goes to the cross, just before he goes to that place where he's going to die for us, that place where he's going to offer himself for us, that place where he's going to deal with the problem of sin. Before he does that, he tells some stories. And we find them in Matthew 25 and 24 and 26, those sorts of areas. And he's trying to prepare his followers for living as kingdom people, living as people who are not just, you know, members of the state of Israel as they were at the time, but members of God's kingdom. And Jesus is saying, you know, I am the king, but I'm going to go away, and I'm going to be away for some time, and yeah, I will come back, but I want you to know how you should live as my people while I am gone. He wanted to challenge them about whether their lives and actions were going to live up to who they were. They were people that he had blessed, he'd given himself, he'd poured something of himself into them. They were changed, they were transformed because they had spent time with Jesus. And Jesus was saying, well, because of that, I expect you to behave differently. And he was trying to explain what that meant. He spent 3 years with them. Now he was going away. He wanted them to carry on living as his people even when they were gone. Imagine the leader of a large company who's built this company up from nothing, spent many years training and developing his workers, his staff, his directors, those who are part of the company, until they're behaving and working exactly as he wants them to. And one day he gets them all together and says, I'm going to do something new. I've got a new venture that I want to get involved with, so I'm going to go away, and I'm going to leave you to yourselves to carry on this company in the way that I started it, in the way that I've trained you, in the way that you know I want to go. And as they leave the meeting, they'll be thinking about, well, what can we do to demonstrate that we have taken on board everything that he's taught us? What can we do to show that we are doing the things that he wants us to in the way that he wants us to? Not because they've learnt the rules, but because they are people who associate themselves with their leader, with his goals, with his ideas, with his way of doing things. And this is something of what is going on here as Jesus tries to prepare his people for what's going to happen next. So what is Jesus talking about in this story? Why is it so important? Oh, and when he talks about the Son of Man coming, he's referring to himself. This is a way that Jesus often referred to himself. He didn't just say, I or me. He says, the Son of Man. He uses this phrase 30 times in Matthew's Gospel. And it reminds us that there was somebody years before that was seen in a vision of Daniel, one of the prophets in the Old Testament. And Daniel had a vision. And he says this, in his vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days, a way of describing God, and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. So there's this idea of somebody, a Son of Man, coming into God's presence and being given authority and power over everything. Someone who's going to be recognized and worshipped by all. And Jesus is saying, I am that person. I'm the fulfillment of that prophecy. Jesus knew that as the Son of Man, his path led through suffering and death. In the next chapter, it says, as you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. He was also confident there was a future beyond that. Yeah, he was going to die, but that wasn't going to be the end. There was a time when he was going to be recognized as that one having that authority and power. When he was speaking, when he was on trial, and he was speaking to those who were accusing him, those who were judging him, Jesus says to them, I say to all of you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven. Jesus is saying, yes, I am on trial. I am in your court, but you have no authority over me. In the future, you are going to see me coming with the power and the authority of God, whatever you do to me now. And here in Matthew 25, he speaks about a time when it will appear in glory, surrounded by God's angels, those incredibly powerful beings who are devoted to worshipping God and carrying out his will. And this is not a new idea. Jesus has spoken about this before. In Matthew 16, we find this. The Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. So that Jesus has already sort of set the scene that he is going to come back. He is going to come back with his angels, and he will reward people based on the way in which they've lived their lives, the things that they've done, the way in which they've engaged with other people. And here, he's providing a bit more detail of what that means. And he goes on to say, I'm not just going to be a king, but I'm going to be a judge. And all the nations will be gathered, and he will separate this group from that group, and he will determine what is going to happen to them. And there is no question as to whether the nations will come. No idea that people will seek to resist him. There is that sense of absolute power, absolute authority, and everybody will need to acknowledge who he is as he takes his place as king and lord. And this is a reversal for what so many people think today. When there are things that go wrong in the world, and the things that they don't like, they think they can blame God and accuse him of not acting. In many ways, people have set themselves up as judges over God, as they expect him to do what they want and get stressed when it doesn't work that way. I expect that whatever the result of Thursday's election, there'll be people accusing God of not making the right result happen. Because we expect God to do what we want, and we judge him when he doesn't. Here Jesus makes it clear that actually it doesn't work that way. That God is in that place of ultimate authority. God is the one who says what is important. And there is a day, Jesus is saying, when he will take his place as judge and carry out God's justice. So that's what Jesus is speaking about. Him returning in glory, him coming to judge, him being recognized as having supreme authority. You know, sometimes you get these criminal cases in a court of law, and you get the accused person saying, I do not recognize the authority of this court. That will not happen here. The authority of Jesus is absolute, and people will recognize that and will submit themselves to his judgment. And what happens is that the assembled nations are separated into two groups, one on the right of Jesus and the other on his left. One group is welcomed, is congratulated, is presented with their inheritance of entering into the kingdom of God. And we just read part of the story this evening, it goes on. And the second part, and the part we read speaks about the rewards for those who are generous and caring. The second part that we didn't read goes on to speak about the punishment of the other group, those who don't care at all for those who desperately need help. And there's no middle ground. There's no group in the middle that people get left and they're uncertain as to whether they should be this side or that side. They're either there on the right or there on the left. There are no abstentions. So Jesus is saying it's vitally important what you do. And it's not the first time Jesus has spoken about this in Matthew 7. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. And here in the story we read, Jesus is giving a bit more context to that. Some people really struggle with this idea of being judged and entering into God's kingdom based on what we've done, whether we've been nice to people or not. Surely, they say, our final destiny is based on how we've responded to Jesus, whether we've committed ourselves to him in faith for salvation, relying on what he achieved on the cross. And we look at that story that we'd find if we went on a bit further in Matthew, and we see that there was a day, a few days later, that Jesus goes and he offers himself and he is convicted as a criminal, unfairly, but convicted as a criminal, and he goes and he dies on a cross. And on that cross he bears the punishment for our sin, the punishment for the sin of the world. He's there to put things right. He dies. 3 days later, God restores him to life as demonstration that Jesus has done everything that was necessary to deal with the problem of sin. And we find through the New Testament that whether we are accepted in God's presence is based on whether we have accepted for ourselves what Jesus has done. So yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's important and something we need to recognize and to deal with. But that's not what Jesus is talking about here. That's not his focus. That's not the thing that he wants his followers to think about. These people he's talking to have made that decision to follow him. But he's saying, actually, I expect that to change how you live. And throughout much of Matthew's gospel, the question that is raised about whether disciples of Jesus are prepared to be obedient to him, to do what he says, to model their lives on his example, and is looking for those whose discipleship and faith is worked out in love and mercy towards others. The question is not really about what you've done, but what sort of person you are. But we only get to see that by what we do. If God looks at and knows the heart, but he's also deeply interested in what we do and how we work out the implications of salvation in our lives. There are some people I meet who claim to be Christians who say that they've made a commitment to follow Jesus, but I see no evidence of this in how they live or in what they do. And so I'm left with questions as to whether their faith is really genuine. Whereas I see others whose attitude, whose ways of life, whose actions demonstrate that they are fully committed to God. And I think they are people of faith. One of the good things, though, is that my opinion doesn't really matter. This is something that God knows, that God determines, and that's a good thing. But we are called to live as a consequence of who we are. And the question which this passage raises is what our professed love of Jesus will cause us to do for others. And Jesus lists 6 acts of kindness that those who are to be rewarded have done. But he doesn't speak about them acting kindly towards other people. He talks about them acting kindly towards him. He speaks about him being given food when he was hungry, water when he was thirsty, and so on. And he goes on to explain that when we act kindly and generously towards others, it's as though we're doing it towards him. So much does he identify with those who are struggling and disadvantaged in the world. And I want to suggest that there are 4 things that needed to be in place for people to respond to the sorts of needs that Jesus is speaking about. The first is there had to be an awareness of the need. Someone needed to see that someone else was struggling without enough to eat, being a stranger in a strange town, needing medical help, or whatever. And this raises the question of how much we're aware of what is going on around us, of the challenges that people are coping with, of the struggles that they are facing. How much do we know about our neighbours, our sisters and brothers here, those who are struggling in our town? So there's an awareness of need. There had to be an impetus to do something about it. Even when we become aware of a need, it's easy to move on and to focus on what we want to do. We see an email asking if someone can help. and there's somebody in need, can we help them? And it's easy to delete it and forget about it and move on. Or do we try and empathise with the person in need and start to care? There has to be the ability to respond to the need. There are some things I'm capable of helping with, and there are others I am not. I was listening to an interview earlier about how the Lions team are doing on their tour. And they won their first match, but apparently it wasn't as convincing as it should have been. If I got the phone call and said, I need you to come and help by playing for this team, I might say, well, actually, you might have got the wrong number. I'm not qualified. There are people better able to help in those situations. We need to have the ability to respond to the need. But the sort of things Jesus is speaking about in this passage are within the grasp of most of us. He's talking about helping people out with the basics of physical and emotional life, of being there for them in their moment of need. Even if we can't heal people, for example, we can be involved in looking after them and caring for them. And the last thing, there had to be some action. Hearing about something, caring about someone, having the ability to help, that's not enough. We actually need to get up and do something about it. We need to send the email, we need to write the letter, we need to ring someone up, we need to arrange to see them, we need to put together a food parcel, whatever it is. And we shouldn't constrain ourselves to the list that Jesus gives here, but seek to reach out to those in need, to connect to them, whatever situation they are in. During our Paraclesis series over the last 7 weeks, we've been thinking about reaching out, about caring for, about journeying with those who are struggling, because it's a good thing to do. Because it's the sort of thing Jesus tells us to do. It's part of living as community together. And those are good motives. But here we get a different motive. It's as though when we do those things, we are doing it for Jesus. We know we can't pay him back for all he has done for us. But we have an opportunity to be a blessing to others in response to him, and so bring blessing to Jesus. It's a response to what Jesus has done, has brought us into. When we next become aware of someone in need, when we're motivated to do something about it, when we recognise that we've got the ability to do something about it, when we act to bring help and blessing to someone, let's be prepared to do it as though we were doing it for Jesus. That Jesus was in that place of need and we were able to help him and bless him. How would that change how we reached out to those in need?